Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 46 of season 11 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast, where we career our way through the 2001 miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to start off the week is John Parker from the Bat Minute. Welcome back to the show, John.
Hello once again. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and I hope that the accommodations over the weekend were sufficient.
Absolutely. I'm being looked after very well.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, you know, again, we also changed months. You know, we went from February to March and things like that. So John and I continue to talk about the interesting things that are going on around the Market Garden.
Yeah, that name alone, I think even people who don't know a lot about World War II, that name that jumps out to them, like, oh, wait, I've heard about that. You know, so when you realize that's what's going on here, it's like, oh, it's that one. Oh.
Right. To me, what's really cool is, I mean, we mentioned a little bit of this on Friday, but, you know, you have the movie, A Bridge Too Far, which is all about Market Garden. And then here, you know, 25 years later, they make a miniseries, and in the miniseries, you know, they show the part that these men played in that movie 25 years earlier.
Yeah, it's like a companion piece in a way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. So I like that. And again, for anyone who's familiar with World War II, then you're aware of the fact that the way this worked. But you could also look at it from the other perspective that this whole series is companion piece to numerous other movies. I mean, come on, yeah. D-Day is the longest day. You know, there's...
But I suppose that comes with the territory when it's, you know, a historical event.
But I like that it's the idea of fitting the puzzle pieces in.
Yeah. It's fascinating to see all this stuff that you, especially I'd seen in some movies, but largely I'd read in books.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I like the way that they do this here. But what's great is it's not as if they're rehashing everything that happened in these other movies that we're talking about. You know, they're giving us a completely different perspective of these events, which I think is really
that's
cool.
The key. That's the most important part, because if you're just repeating it, what's the point? But too many things, if you made this now, they'd probably just, oh, let's recreate that scene that we liked from that other movie. That's what they'd do. They'd ruin it somehow.
That's true. And I'm glad they didn't do anything about that.
Then again, I'm saying that. I think I'm thinking in the Hollywood vein. But they did the, I don't want to call it a sequel, the companion show, you know, years later. And that still was very good.
You're talking about the Pacific?
Yeah. I don't want to call it. People sometimes say, "Oh, it's like a second season almost." It's like, well, it kind of is.
No,
you know, it's a spiritual successor.
Not at all.
But it's like a spiritual thing, you know. It's like, oh, well, we want to do kind of a similar thing, you know. That's what they were going for, wasn't it?
Right. But again, no. People haven't heard it yet, and you haven't either. But in about a month from now, I want to be able to hear the interview that I did with Bruce McKenna, who was one of the main writers on Band of Brothers. He actually, this part that we're talking about, he did a lot of rewrites on it. So he's credited as one of the writers on part four.
Awesome.
And he also was one of the showrunners and the producers of The Pacific. So I had a fascinating conversation with him about both of these and, you know, how it all came to be. Stuff like that. So, you know, the Pacific was spawned from the fact that Band of Brothers was a success. There's no question about it. But it was purposely done in a different way in order to give a completely different perspective and a different feel. And the Pacific is much darker than Band of Brothers.
I think that's why it worked, though. Like, there were too many people who, when they watched it, were like, oh, I don't like that as much. It's not the same. Yeah, it's not supposed to be the same. If you want the same, just watch this again.
That's the way it sounds.
Yeah, you gotta change it up. You gotta mix it up, and I think they did. You know, I think they did.
Yes, and again, I mean, one of the things that Bruce told me is the fact that because it was 10 years later, and that there were a lot less of the people they were portraying that were still around, There were things that they could show and say that they couldn't do in Band of Brothers. He told me that there are stories that they heard from some of the men from Easy that were things that they couldn't put on screen because they were just way too dark.
Oh,
And
okay.
he like alluded to some examples, but didn't really give me real examples of it. But again, during war, things do happen that you might not be proud of later.
It's a yeah. Most people don't get put in this position. So, when you are thrust into this position, sometimes against your will, I imagine it's not, you're not quite thinking the same way that you normally would,
Exactly. So there's it's and then you could talk about also the whole idea of Masters of the Air, same idea. And here it's even another 15 years later when there's even less of the men that are around, and you still have the different type of story to tell, and you need to find a different perspective to tell it so that it doesn't feel as if it's rehashing things that were in the other two previous shows.
And
That way.
weirdly, all this talk does tie into this segment we're about to talk about, because there is a quite a dark turn.
Yes. But we'll get there. We'll get there. Episode 46 begins with lots of happiness in Eindhoven, Holland.
It's adorable, I think, like how excited they are, kissing and all the celebrations. It looks really like they've really captured how genuinely happy these people must have been,
Yes. And the this episode ends with a local man asking a question. So yeah, we will touch upon with what you're saying about the genuine happiness, which we'll see if we believe the complete genuine happiness of everyone.
Yeah, I mean, my initial thought, if I'm a soldier, would be I would be worried being in a big crowd like this. Is there going to be danger hidden somewhere? I wouldn't trust anything.
Well, we shall touch upon that also. Something that is going to be coming up. So the we have this minute opening up, or this 5 minute segment opening up with a lot of people cheering and waving flags of the Netherlands, and you have the orange flags all around also, and people on on balconies, and first of all, it's a great shot. Because
Oh.
it's showing all of these people that are happy to have been liberated.
Yeah,
And
it's hard to put yourself in their shoes in a way, because I've never ever experienced anything even 1% of what these people have,
No, that's understandable. Neither have
I would hope most people haven't, sadly that's not always the case.
And then we get a shot of Bull, who's very happy and appreciative of the happiness of all the people around him. And it's really funny, we see like a priest that's right behind him that's handing out cigars.
Hey, well, back in those days, pretty much everybody smoked, even when I was, when I was younger, in my younger days, you forget how every single aspect of life, at least in England, just everything stank of cigarettes and cigars. And it's just a different world, So yeah, priest, he's got them. He's probably got access to these things, he's the clergy maybe have their ways.
Maybe. And then we see like a kid run over to one of the soldiers, and he lifts him up and lifts him up high and stuff like that. Again, showing the genuine happiness of both sides here. And then Lip comes up to Bull and goes, Bull, you see Captain Winders? And he goes, no, why? He goes, keep your squad moving. And Lip realizes that they cannot be standing here. This is not a good place to be standing, no matter how happy everyone is. And Lip continues walking, and a woman comes over to him and just gives him a kiss on the cheek. And then he like wipes the kiss off of his cheek, you know.
Maybe
That's
he's
right.
has he got a partner? Maybe he feels bad. Oh, someone kissed me. Oh.
It could be. It could be.
No, but it's a good point. Like, it doesn't. You can't. You've well, A, you've got a job to do, but B, it's dangerous, right? Like, there could be anything could happen in this moment. All it takes is one or two bad actors, you know.
That's right. You know, we see both Miller and Garcia walking by, and we're back to another very young James McAvoy. They go, "Where are all the Germans?" And they go, "They could be anywhere." And then
Exactly.
the lieutenant then says to them, "Keep moving." You know, and this is when you know, like one of the young women comes and hugs Garcia, and you know, the lieutenant is trying to get people to move. You know, we have Bruce here, and you can clearly see he's got a kiss mark on the side of his face, which is hilarious from that
I
perspective.
noticed that. I loved it. The attention to just leave that on there. Fantastic.
Yes, to show that he's trying to move people on, but he still has, you know, been ambushed, I guess you can say, by one of these very appreciative women.
Yeah,
And
it'd be quite easy to be distracted, which I
yes.
think is the worry, isn't it? It's like, no, we need to move.
That's right. And then Lip comes over and sees Percante, and Percante has his head in the breasts of a woman who's dancing around with him, and he pulls him out, and you see that he's got like this dazed look on his face, and it's such a great shot.
Well, you know, he's being polite. That's the way I would say. You don't want to be mean to somebody. You just go along with it. I'm being
Okay.
nice.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
It's exactly the kind of situation I would not want to be in, but I would find myself in because it would be like, if you pull yourself away, that's rude.
Yes. If I ever get to speak to James Matteo, which numerous people have told me they're trying to get in touch with him for me to speak to him, I got a charter member to ask him about this particular scene. Yeah,
It's
because
fantastic because you hear stories about this happening, don't you?
correct.
Like these kind of celebrations. I've seen like pictures and things, and it's nice to see it sort of played out like this, to actually witness what it might have been like a touch.
Yeah. Now, and the look on his face, the look on Percante's face, gives us so much insight into the fact that once again, you're dealing with 18 to 20-year-old men, boys, who are there. And that's the
Yes.
way they are going to be responding mostly in these type of situations. You know, you have
You
beautiful
forget how
women.
young a lot of them are.
That's right.
Yeah.
You have beautiful women that are throwing themselves at you because you've liberated them. And why not enjoy it while you can?
Yeah. You don't get a lot of good times in this era, you know. So they're like, well, I'm going to take it when I can get it.
That's right. That's right. But again, just the look on his face tells us so much about it.
Yeah, they don't know how to respond almost, do they? Well, I suppose it's like being a celebrity in a way. It's like being a movie star or something.
Because again, these people are very appreciative.
Yeah, it's refreshing as well to see, because most of the time we see scenes like this before and since, it tends to be, you know, maybe feigned a little bit, like someone has conquered someone else. But this is an actual moment of, okay, we've just freed you and now we're going. And it's like, oh, you know, it's like the most exciting time for these people. Like, oh, we're finally back, you know, to what we want to be.
Seriously, and that's one of the good things about this, the way that they show it, you know.
Including stuff that's coming up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Again, they need to be as accurate as possible with what they're showing, so it sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and then you know, Lip pulls Percante's face out of the woman's breast, and he says, "Pardon me," and it looks like you know, Donnie Wahlberg just can't not laugh at this whole thing.
It's a realistic reaction, I think. Yeah, you would be just in stitches. I think, like, you probably couldn't believe it, you know.
Yeah. And you know, then then you know they continue showing us this celebration, and you know a woman grabs Cobb's helmet and runs away and goes, "Come on, lady!" And he starts chasing after her. You know.
For some reason, the first time I rewatched this, I didn't notice she took the helmet. I thought initially, oh, is he like sneaking off to you know have some fun, let's say. But then, yeah, when I rewatched it, I was like, oh no, it's completely the opposite. Because she's taking his helmet with you know the best of intentions. She's not trying to steal. It's just all a bit of fun, isn't it? But yeah, I thought maybe they were heading off to do something, which could happen. Maybe that's why she's taking it. Like, oh, chase me. You know?
I believe that is what it is. What they're trying to do.
Yeah.
And again, that goes along with what we're about to be talking about. It sort of makes sense.
But at least in this case, it would be with a good, you know, it would all be above board, let's say.
I don't know. I don't know. We're gonna, you know. So one of the things that they talk about in the book, it says they entered the town. The residents were drawn up on each side of the road as if for a parade. Unlike in Normandy, where the French villagers mainly stayed out of sight, the Dutch were ecstatic to be liberated. The parish priest, Hussein, I don't know, handed out cigars. Orange flags forbidden by the German occupiers flew from the windows. People gave the passing paratroopers apples and other fruit. Bartenders opened their taps and handed out glasses of beers. Officers had a hard time keeping the men moving. And
it's
that's
interesting
all it says about this. And that's what's amazing. You know, that they, first of all, they give us the shot of the priest handing out cigars. And that's like one little line here.
Yeah, it's a really good extrapolation, because they're not like obviously you've only got that information, but they've obviously gone to other sources and like you know photographs and things, because I've seen pictures and it's like this, but if you just go off the book, it's like, well, okay, what do? We need to flesh this out somehow, or it would be a millisecond of the episode.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And it's interesting them pointing out the difference between Normandy. Because obviously I think when Normandy happened, maybe people were still like, they probably thought, is this going to last? Is this going to work? We don't want to, if you go out and celebrate, you're probably going to anger the Germans if they come back. But at this point, maybe they're thinking, oh, the tide's turning. It's working.
It's very possible.
Well, they've had a few victories. That's, you know, whereas in Normandy, it's like, you would assume that's not going to work. It's crazy that it works.
That's very true. And you know, as Cobb runs to go catch his helmet, so he passes by Winters, and we see Winters is using binoculars to try to, you know, see what's going on. And,
well, again, there could be just one random leftover person who just wants to spoil the occasion, let's say. He's maybe looking out for things as well.
Yeah, 100%. And then Nixon comes over to him and goes, "Dick, clock's ticking." He goes, "Yeah, thank you." And, you know, the women come over and they're all thanking him. And he goes, "Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, very kind, thank you." Winters
that's a polite way of saying, "I'm moving on."
That's right. He's not interested in letting any of these women really bug him, even though they're coming over and kissing them.
It's okay to accept a kiss and a hug, but yeah, don't be doing anything else. Come on.
Yeah. And then we get a shot of the four officers. We have you know, Nixon, Winters, Welsh, and Compton all standing there, and they all start lifting up their lapels. Compton goes, "What's up, Welshy?" And he goes, "Snipers."
Oh yeah.
And then Winters says, "We got to get to those bridges." Now, again, that is the goal of Operation Market Garden, to take over all the bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And the 101st, you know, has their objective that they need to get to. And they start walking out, and then the shot changes, and we get back to Bull. And Bull is trying to make his way through all of this crowd. And he sees Hashi
doing quite well considering the amount of people, I think.
Exactly. And then he sees Hashi sitting at like a little table, I guess at a cafe, eating what looks like cheese. Need to have
Hey,
some.
you know,
Come on, come with me.
that would be my priority in this moment. It's like, oh, there's food. Oh, yes, thank you.
Exactly.
Because I'm, you know, I'm, let's be honest, they've probably not been eating great.
Right.
Not what you want to eat, not luxury, you know.
Exactly. And then we see someone taking pictures of all the men together with kids. Like there's a little girl who's wearing one of their helmets. Again, these 19 and 20 year olds are ecstatic in this particular situation.
Yeah, it's a rare moment of bliss, isn't it? Which they probably don't get very often.
That's right. And then we get a shot of Talbert, who has a woman sitting on his lap, and he's making out with her. Now, for anyone paying attention, in front of Talbert is the real Babe Heffron. He has a cameo here,
Oh, wow.
sitting in the middle of this sitting, I guess, at a table in a cafe, in the middle of this.
Oh, that's incredible. I never knew that. Oh, wow. I've just got that bit up on the clip and it, oh, that's amazing.
And Talbert seems to be enjoying himself. And then Lieutenant
Well, you
Brewster comes over and goes, "Sergeant Talbert, let's move. We got work to do."
He's like, no, I'm busy.
Exactly. And then he gets up, gives the woman another kiss, and starts walking away. And she just like stares at him for a few seconds, and then the shot changes, and we see a bunch of men walking down the street. One of them's carrying a rifle. And then another one points to this exact woman who was just kissing Talbert, and they grab her and start taking her away, and she protests as they go. And we see just other people just staring and watching what's going on and not knowing how to respond and what to say.
Yeah, like do they in do, does people are probably thinking, do I intervene? Especially the soldiers, you know, like the American soldiers, is like they're probably thinking in the back of their mind, maybe I shouldn't, you know, get involved. This isn't about us, you know.
And then we see that there's like a closed off area, closed off by people because there's so many people around. And then like a little kid walks by and tries to get into this circle. He's got like this little Dutch flag. And then we get to see into the circle what's going on. And we see a whole bunch of men and women that are basically shaving the heads of a bunch of other women. And you can see on the ground a lot of hair that apparently has been shaven off of a lot of these women. And we see a woman being dragged across her dress is partially, I guess, torn or pulled down, and she's like bleeding from the side of her head as they take her out of the circle. And there's another one, the same thing. And then there's a third one also, and we see the third one has a swastika on her forehead. Now, I don't think it's an Inglourious Basterds type of swastika. I think
Oh,
it's just painted
no.
on. But still, it says something. And then they bring this woman in the pink dress into the circle, and the men rip off part of her dress and pull it down a little bit. And she's crying and screaming as they make her kneel inside of the circle. And someone, we get a shot of another woman whose hair is being cut. And then we see Bull on the outskirts of this circle, looking in, trying to figure out. He's with Hashi. They're trying to more or less figure out what's going on. And we see that they're cutting the woman's hair, and she's just crying. She hasn't much to do, but people are chanting and cheering. That this is what they should be doing. Again, it's a little bit of a mystery at this point for us what really is going on, just like it is for the soldiers. Bull has a very inquisitive look on his face, trying to figure out what it is that's going on here.
Yeah, and again, they're probably thinking, do we need to like police this? Should we step in? And I think they quickly sort of figure it out and realize that it's not their place almost. Because it's really, I mean, should we talk about what it is?
Well,
they're doing.
we'll talk about it in a second, because then we have Winters, Compton, and Welsh standing there, and Welsh goes, "What did they do?" And before any of them can even try to bring up any type of answer, a local from behind them comes up and goes, "They slept with the Germans." And then they all look like, that's a cruel method of what to do. They just look back at him, and then he goes, "But they're lucky. The men who collaborated are being shot."
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because it's a really difficult position to be in. I think it's very harsh on the women, especially though, because even though they're not being shot, because they probably a lot of them, they would have had no choice but to sleep with the German men. They'd have been put in that position. I'm sure some of them were just collaborators, but a lot of people would pre feel like, well, I've got to do that, or I'm going to be killed. You know, you'd be pressured into this. So it is very it's difficult to know what to
It's very
do.
precarious because we don't know the exact history. They frame it in a way that these women were collaborators, but if you look at the number of people that are in the town, they're not taking everybody, which means that it's not something that they it's not as if again, I'm the last person who's going to be defending the Germans here, but it's not as if the Germans came there and said, "Sleep with us or we're going to kill you," or something like that.
That's
It's
almost definitely
possible.
what they would have done,
It's
isn't it?
possible that that's what they did, but apparently they didn't do that with everybody in the town, because there are a lot of women that we see that are not being dragged into the circle. Maybe they
Oh
only took
yeah,
the ones that went voluntarily.
well, that's the thing. It's hard to know, isn't it?
Correct.
That's
It's not
why
that it's not that it's
it's
hard to know. It's
difficult. I'm not
impossible.
defending the punishing of the women,
It's not hard
but
to
you
tell.
can
It's
see why they've
impossible
done
to tell.
it, you know?
There's no way of us ever knowing. But this is the way they wanted to frame the thing. I couldn't find in the book that they actually describe this particular scene. I mean, they definitely don't describe it when they, because I read the whole paragraph of what they said in about them being in the town. So
Well, I know for a fact this happened in like other places. Like they did this exact thing in like France. So it's based on a historical thing, regardless of if it happened in this moment or not. You know, it is a thing that was done with the head shaving and everything, you know.
Again,
But again, I'd
the
especially in like especially in this era, even without a war on. You know, women were often controlled by men anyway. So I always find it a bit harsh. But then some of them might have just betrayed. Ah, oh, it's so difficult, isn't it? Oh. Yeah, I think, but I don't think anyone's at fault here. It's a weird situation.
Right. But I do like the fact that they're showing it to us. They're saying it's nothing is black and white. That's what they're telling us here.
Yeah, exactly. There's a It's all grey, because you want to punish a collaborator, of course you do. Why wouldn't you? But are they even collab? We don't know. I don't think they know. I don't think they even care. It's just about getting a sense of control back, I reckon, for the country and the town and whatnot.
Yeah, it's I but from the other perspective, it's good that they're showing it to us, like that they're not trying to sugarcoat it at all.
Too many older things probably would skip over this. Like, oh no, everything has to be good and positive and heroic and whatnot. But no, that wasn't the reality all the time.
Exactly, which again, I like the way that they do that. And then Nixon gives more information as to who this man is who's talking to them. He goes, "Mr. Van Kuyt here is with the Dutch resistance. He goes, we've been waiting and hoping for this day for almost 5 years. Says he can help us secure the bridges here. Yes, together we can push the remaining Germans out of Eindhoven. And that's just the beginning." And Winter goes, "Any idea where they might be?" And Nixon goes, "Oh, well, we're still working on that right now. Like, nobody knows where the Germans just disappeared to."
That's suspicious.
Very.
The Germans weren't known for just running away, you know.
And then a young boy is brought to the Winters, and the head of the resistance says, "Pearson and his friends here are gathering information as we speak. His contacts a couple of towns down said they saw British second and guards armored move through half an hour ago. Winter goes to their kids. These are reliable reports. Anything we can do to help you, we will do. Anything.
I believe him that it's reliable, right? Because I think kids getting information, right, that's horrible, having kids involved. But this wasn't a normal war. It's horrible it's come to that. But they're also probably good at getting information and going unnoticed, almost like a hobbit. You know? You don't notice them. They're just a kid. It's just a kid.
That's right. And, I mean, even in The Longest Day, they showed that in Normandy, there were a lot of kids that were helping out with the resistance. Mm. For that very reason.
They seem unthreatening, you see, yeah.
Right. Correct. And it makes sense.
Yeah,
and I love how they're having this conversation, and in every shot we can see people still cheering and waving flags in the background.
Mm. And this Dutch guy, I don't know his name. Is the actor Dutch? Because he seems like the most Dutch man I've ever witnessed. he's incredible. I love him.
He's played by an actor named Hugo Metzers, who is Dutch. Mm.
Hey, yeah, I got that. I could feel it. I could feel it. He's great. I think he's fantastic. And I'm obsessed with his clothes as well. I want them.
Well, his clothes are about 80 years old, so that might be a problem. But
yeah. All my clothes are old. It's all good.
Okay.
Modern stuff, bah, I don't want that.
Okay, now that makes sense.
And I kind of wish he was around a little bit more. He seems like a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Winters goes over to a lamppost to go see what's going on. And he steps up, and Bull is there once again. Bull is everywhere, and Bull just says, "It goes." Yeah, and you know they're watching, and then the. You know, trying to figure out what's going on, and they then see a bunch of British tanks show up in the middle of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And his thoughts are broken up by this Dutch resistance guy, who then says to him, "Captain, I'll be happy to show you the quickest route to the bridges." And Winters then said, "Well,
yeah,
we'd be happy to have your help."
Yeah, got to get back to it. Get snapped out of their little days, get back to work.
And I love the shot of the tanks, because you see a whole bunch of local women on the tanks waving flags, once again showing us that even the British are able to will succumb to this overjoy from the locals.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't think they even asked, "Can we go on the tank?" The women probably just jumped on, and they're like, "Oh, okay, this is what we're doing now."
Right, that's true. And then Winters turns and goes, "Get scouts to the edge of the town in case we're here for the night." You know, again, Winters is always thinking of how to protect everyone as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah. You need to in this. But I don't think, I mean, we don't see them do that. I don't think they should stay like in the town. Like they need to move. This will become a whole thing otherwise.
Yeah. And then they have a great transition shot that brings us to night. And we see a soldier walking through a field in the middle of the night. And he comes by a haystack where there's two other guys on the ground. And then Webster goes, "Hey, Van Klinken," which is a another one of the guys that we have here.
Which is, you know, interesting because, I mean, that name sounds Dutch.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I guess he's a Dutch-American?
I guess he's supposed to be, but... Again, if you look in the credits, that you have a guy named Robert Van Klinken, played by an actor Ezra Godin, and you know he is someone who appears in numerous episodes. This is actually his fourth episode that he appears in. Klinken is Webster calls out to him and he goes, "Hey, Webster." And then Clinton goes, "Sleeping outside is for suckers, guys."
I'm with him. I'm with him. Fools, don't sleep outside. You haven't got a tent or anything.
Okay, but they're
Awful.
supposed to be somewhat on guard.
Oh yeah, but it just the comfort level is too low. It's too low for me. I need a little bit of padding or something.
Okay.
I've slept on people's floors, and that's horrible enough, you know.
Fair enough. And then Webster goes, they get up and start following Van Klinken, and Webster goes, "Better be good. I was almost asleep." And then they go toward, they see like a storm cellar that they walk towards, and someone comes out and starts talking to them in I'm not sure if it's in Dutch or in German. I believe it's supposed to be in Dutch, but maybe it is German.
I think the conversation definitely, they have a little bit of dialogue in Dutch because a lot of Dutch words are similar to German, you
Right.
know. So it is kind of hard to tell, but I'm pretty confident it's in Dutch.
Right. I mean, we know that in the miniseries, Webster speaks German. I don't know if he really spoke German or not, but he's one of the translators. And then he goes a little bit. The guy, the local, says a little bit. So I guess the question was, is do you speak English? And he goes, "What were you
Yeah,
doing
but
down there?" And he says, "It's
it makes me
America."
laugh though, because it makes me laugh because he does the thing that a lot of Europeans do. Whenever you say, "Do you speak English?" they always say a little bit, and then proceed to have the best English conversation with you've ever heard. You know, better than an English person.
Then he says, "It's an air raid shelter. My family has been there ever since the first plane flew over." Well, then he goes, "We're Americans, paratroopers." Then the man says to him, he goes, "The Germans are gone?" And as he asks that question, the segment ends.
Now, I think TV and film has made me a very cynical person. My first thought on rewatch was, he seems suspicious. And I am so happy that he's not. Because
We'll talk a
I don't
little bit
want to be
more
a
about him
cynic, you
tomorrow.
know? Yeah. It turns out he's a nice guy. And you want to see nice people in these things. Some people are nice.
Yes. Well, again, we see that a lot of the people in Holland are very, very nice.
There you go, very, very.
In some ways, maybe a little too nice. But what can you do?
I'll take it, you know. It's an improvement from what they had.
Yes, that is true. So, is there anything else you wanted to discuss about this particular 5-minute segment?
No, I think that's everything. It's one of the best segments actually. So thank you for giving me this because we've got a bit of lightness and darkness,
Yes.
and it's
And that's
interesting
perfect for
to, you know,
Batman because that's what Batman is. Yeah.
exactly. And you know, it being a real event, again, we don't know if this necessarily happened in this moment, but it definitely happened
Yes.
during like liberation. So I think it's important to highlight it because again. So I'm sure a good portion of these women are, I don't say innocent, but you know, they were pressured into this for, I'm sure some of them weren't, but it's nice to highlight their sort of plight
Yes.
a little bit, let's say. Because again, this woman in the pink, we don't know what happened to her. She might have been, how do I say this without using the word? She might have been
Forced.
coerced, let's
Forced.
say. Yeah.
Anything is possible.
Yeah, because
We never know.
I fully believe like if a drunk German soldier's in the town and he wants his way, he's probably going to, you know.
You never know. And we never will know.
No.
All right. So now we will play today's game. Today's segment is a game called World War II Movie Trivia. Let's see what questions you get and whether there'll be movies that we talked about over the last today or Friday. You never know. On Friday, you got a movie that we talked about. So anything is possible in this randomness. So let's spin the wheel and see what we get.
Oh God.
Yeah, I know you don't like this, but oh well.
I like it, but I'm not good at it.
Okay. In the movie Ice Cold in Alex, this is a two-part question. What is Alex and what is ice cold?
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a good question. I'm racking my brain. Because if I remember, it's like based on a true story. What was it?
It's
Think
a
is the ice
movie.
cold thing?
It's a movie from 1958 that takes place in North
Yeah,
Africa.
it's an old one, isn't it? The reference to ice cold isn't that they just have like they drink like a beer?
Yes, ice cold is beer. They were trying to get beer.
That's it. That's it. Because I seem to recall that was like a big, like a moment of like catharsis or like showing that they've survived or whatever.
Yes, exactly.
I can't remember Alex. Is Alex just like? Oh God, I don't remember what. Is it just a person? I don't remember. I don't remember. Is it the lead? I
No,
don't know.
okay, ice cold in Alex. Okay. So you're saying is it that they're drinking cold beers and the guy, his name is Alex? That's what you that...
I'm positive that's not it, but I can't think of what
Well,
else
okay,
Alex.
they're in North Africa. Does that help you?
Oh, that's a place.
Okay.
Yeah, is it Alexandria?
Yes, it is. There you go.
Yes. Okay, I always forget that it did used to often get shortened to Alex, didn't it?
Well,
Because I would never
apparently
call
in
it that.
1958 it was.
Yeah. People, I think maybe it was like a soldier thing, you know. But yeah, I because I would never shorten it to that. I just think of it as Alexandria. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. It's the place.
Yes. Very good. All right. Let us spin the wheel again and see what your next question will be. Around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay, what 1981 movie features Michael Caine and Sylvester Stallone alongside football legends Pelé and Bobby Moore as POWs who try to plan an escape plot during World War II?
Is that the football one or soccer, depending on where your listeners are? Is that the football one?
Yes.
What was that called? I know it. I know it, but I can't think of the name. It's definitely the football one. I know that. Half a point. Oh, what was the name? I don't know. Can I have clues for the name at all?
It's hard to give you clues because it's there are two titles. There's either a three-word title or a one-word title. Most people know it as the one-word title.
Oh, okay.
And
One word.
it begins with
Oh.
a yeah, what?
One word title. Is it Victory?
Yes, it is.
Yes. What's the three word one?
Escape to Victory.
Oh, I like that more. I think that's better.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with you thinking that that's fair.
I don't like. Sometimes one word titles are a bit forgetful, hence why I forgot it. There you go.
Yes, but when I said it was a one-word title, you remembered it. So.
But it triggered my stupid ADHD brain recollection skills, you know.
Okay. All right. That's a fair way to look at it.
These things lie dormant for years.
Okay. All right. Let's spin the wheel again and see what you get. Okay, who plays the title character in the 1951 movie The Flying Leathernecks?
Oh God, I haven't seen this one. 50s as well. Oh. I can't even, to be honest, I can't even guess. I can't even guess.
Think of who would probably be playing a soldier in a 1951 movie. It's somebody who often played either a soldier or a cowboy.
Oh. John Wayne?
Yes.
to be honest, the only reason I got it, because again, I've not seen this at all. The only reason I got it was when you said cowboy. I was like, hang on a minute. It's in that era. It's got to be. It's got to be. What a guess.
There you go. Very nice. It still
I can't
counts.
pretend to be smart.
It still counts. It still counts.
Yeah, I'm taking it.
All right. Let's see what the next one's gonna be. You're doing well so far.
Well, it's the hints again. It's always the hints.
Okay, well, why not? Okay, in the 2017 movie The Darkest Hour, Gary Oldman won an Oscar for portraying what real person?
Winston Churchill.
Yes.
Yes. Underrated movie in a way. I know it got awards, but people don't talk about it because I didn't watch it for ages because I was worried. I thought, oh, a movie about Churchill, it's going to be like all, oh, isn't Britain great jingoistic nonsense? And it actually isn't that. It's very, very good. I would recommend it to people. If you're worried that it's going to be all patriotic in the bad way, no, don't be concerned.
Exactly. All right, so let us spin the wheel one final time and see what your fifth question will be. Okay, in the 1963 classic The Great Escape, what is the name of the German prison camp from which the Allied POWs attempt a mass breakout?
Oh, hang on. Oh, I know it, I know it, I know it. I'm sort of going through the Rolodex of my brain. Oh, which one is it in the movie? Oh, why am I blanking? Why am I... It's because I'm put on the spot. That's what it is. I bet I could recall this at any moment normally. Which one are they doing in the movie? Is it... Is it... It's Stalag something.
Yes, you're on the right track. You're on the right track.
It's bugging me. Stalag... Oh, Stalag Luft
Yes, you're
something. There's a number.
pick
There's a
a number,
number.
pick a number.
Two?
A little higher.
Three?
Three, there you go. Stalag Luft three.
I should have picked th three's my lucky number. Why didn't I pick three?
Because
I don't
apparently
think I would have
you weren't
remembered the
feeling
number.
well.
I'm amazed I got the name.
very good, John. Nicely done. Nicely done. All right, and now we will play the daily game of name that World War II movie. And again, it could be one of the movies we just talked about. Anything is possible. Let's spin the wheel
Okay.
and see what you get. If it is one of them, I'm just going to give you the year.
Okay.
It's not. It's not. Okay, this is a movie that came out in 1965, and it's about a family during World War II, and it won multiple Oscars, including Best Picture.
Best Picture, 60s. Trying to think what won Best Picture.
It's a musical.
Oh, thingy, the Sound of Music.
Yes, very
Yeah.
good.
I mean, it had to be. As soon as you said musical, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's one I like, but I don't watch a lot because it's long.
Yeah, because Band of Brothers is short, so
Well,
yeah.
it feels different when it's a show because it's like, well, you can break it up a little bit. It has built in, breaks.
Okay, fair enough. Excellent. All right. So, John, would you like to tell people where they can find John Parker?
Yes, indeed. I will do a different plug today. If you would like to hear more from me and my Bat Minute co-host did another podcast called Miami Minutes, which is going through the formerly lost 1980s martial arts movie, Miami Connection. One of those that's considered so bad it's good, but me and Niall, we're not approaching it from that angle because too many people do that. We don't think it's a bad movie. We love the movie with all our heart and soul. So we're just talking about it as seriously as we can. We point out the flaws and we have a laugh, but we're like, no, this is art. So check out Miami Minutes wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Run Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierunminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierunminute@movierun.net. So until tomorrow, three.
Three.